2 Timothy 2:15. Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Alpha and Omega Ministries presents The Dividing Line radio broadcast. The Apostle Peter commanded all Christians to be ready to give a defense for the hope that is within us, yet to give this answer with gentleness and reverence. Your host is Dr. James White, director of Alpha and Omega Ministries and an elder at the Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church. If you'd like to talk with Dr. White, you can call now by dialing 602-274-1360. That's 602-274-1360. Or if you're out of the Metro Phoenix dialing area, it's 1-888-550-1360. That's 1-888-550-1360. And now, with today's topic, here's James White.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Dividing Line. My name is James White. Well, I was sitting at my desk working on a book. I think my publisher will be glad to hear that I, yes, am working on a book entitled The God Who Justifies, when the phone rang. And my good friend Simon Escobedo was on the phone. He said, James, are you listening to the radio? And I said, no. And he said, well, there's a program on another station there in the valley that, and they're attacking you. They're talking about your King James book. Well, it had been a while since that particular radio station, and it's not KPXQ, aired a yet another King James-only attack upon me. One of the last ones they had done a number of years ago was wonderfully titled, The Public Spanking of James White. Yes, King James only folks do tend to like to use very acerbic terminology when they address this particular issue. And so I turned on the radio, and lo and behold, what do I hear but the Southwest Radio Church, Noah Hutchings, and who do they have on? Dr. Spargimino is interviewing D.A. Waite. Now, those of you who are familiar with our website know that one of the King James only debates that we have available on the website is the radio debate done in 1994 with Dr. Waite. And in fact, I would invite anyone to go to the website, go to our website, follow the links to straightgate.com, listen to the debate with Dr. Waite. I believe that anyone who is familiar with the issues and familiar with how debate goes knows that that debate did not go very well for Dr. Waite. He was challenged on many issues where he was not able to provide any type of meaningful substantiation for what he was saying. Well, Dr. Waite is on, and actually they were doing a number of programs on my book. They had already had Dr. Theodore Letus on. And again, if you go to our website, you will discover a number of articles. And one article, a very long article, is a online debate that was done. It wasn't a formal debate, but a debate that was done between myself and Dr. Letus and a number of other people that is most interesting. Here, the Southwest Radio Bible Church is presenting a man who does not even believe in inerrancy, who believes in all sorts of things that the Southwest folks would not believe in, but as long as he promotes the King James, even if for very different reasons than they would promote it, then he is presented. But this program was with Dr. Waite, and Dr. Waite did two programs. And what we're going to do is we're going to respond to those programs beginning this week here on The Dividing Line. And since my name and my book was used, then we'll give you exactly what they themselves said, fair usage doctrine, and we will let them make the statements, and then I will respond. Now, I would love to have Dr. Waite on the program. I really would. I invited Dr. Waite on the program last year. I sent emails to the Bible for Today. Every single one of them was consistently ignored. Dr. Waite will not respond to the challenges that we have sent to him as of this date. And so if you're saying, well, it's unfair to address this issue, I wasn't invited to be on the Southwest Radio Church programs. I would gladly be on. Let it be known, I would most gladly be on with both Dr. Spargimino and Dr. Waite. If they'd like to have us on, Dr. DiVietro, if they'd like to be on, that would be fun. That'd be fine. That'd be wonderful. We invited, Dr. White was invited to be on the John Ankerberg series we did back in 95, 96, but he declined that as well. And so in the spirit that says, well, if you have the truth, you don't have to hide that truth, we'd like to respond to the assertions made by D.A. Waite on this national program. And then when people contact us, we can refer them to these audio files and they can listen to them for themselves and understand that there's another side, that in fact, one side is open to dialogue, it's the other side that is not. And I think that says a lot about the relative strengths of both. Now, it is interesting to listen to what Noah Hutchings says right at the beginning of the program, because I personally think this is very, very encouraging. Listen to what he has to say.
Taking a look at this book by Dr. White, because most of those who have changed to newer versions or justify their stand on the newer version take this book by Dr. White as a reference.
Now, I think the fact that they have to address this book at all demonstrates how effective it has been, but that seems to be an admission, at least from my perspective, that the book has had a tremendous impact upon the King James-only controversy and upon the King James-only community. And it's not because of anything that I did. It's the simple fact that when you allow both sides to be heard, when you give a response, it's logical. It makes sense. It's historical, it's biblical, and that's why these individuals are attempting to respond to it. Now, I must admit, at least at the beginning, we had some somewhat nice words said. In fact, it was interesting to hear the introduction to the first program. Let's listen in.
For this program and the next, I will be visiting with Dr. D.A. Waite. We want to speak about the James White book on the King James Bible. We're going to be giving an answer to the book, The King James Only Controversy, by James White. Now, friends, this book has been endorsed by a large number of evangelicals, including John MacArthur, Hank Hanegraaff, D.A. Carson, and several others. James White has become sort of a household name. If you take the position that we do regarding the King James Bible, someone will say, but have you read the James White book? Well, I've gotten calls from listeners who have said just that, and I was talking a little while ago with our announcer, Jerry Giltner. Jerry tells me that he has gotten the same question, but have you read the James White book? And Jerry's answer was, yes, I have read the James White book. As a matter of fact, I had two copies. I kept one for myself and gave one to Brother Jerry, and so we discussed some of the issues that Mr. White raises. So, yes, I have read the book. I think James White has done a lot of research and a lot of work in certain areas. I think he's very strong. As a matter of fact, I recently heard him in a public debate with a Roman Catholic apologist, and I think Mr. White did a fine job. But, of course, we have some major differences with him regarding the King James Bible.
It would be very interesting to know if the good doctor was referring to the recent debate with Tim Staples, or if he was listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. I have no way of knowing, but that's pretty much the end of the nice words. And in fact, from this point onward, anyone who has read the King James Only Controversy has to be absolutely amazed at what happens in listening to Dr. Spargimino and Dr. Waite talk. The reason, and I've already had some people who've listened to this, who did listen or read my book, and they go, how can these people say that? I remember where you exactly addressed that, or said that, or refuted that, or whatever it might be. For example, at the very beginning of the interview, the first question that Dr. Spargimino asks D.A. Waite goes like this.
You know, it seems to me that James White is not simply attacking the King James Bible as a translation, but that at root, he is really attacking the received text and the whole idea of Bible preservation. In fact, it's hard for me to believe that a person who would support the idea of verbal plenary inspiration, as Mr. White does, would also debunk the whole idea of the preservation of the text. And he does not seem to believe that God has preserved his word.
Now, such an assertion is simply untrue, and anyone who has read the King James Only Controversy knows that I specifically addressed that very issue, and I specifically debunked the assertion that I do not believe in Bible preservation and pointed out the illogic of those who would say that you have to believe in their version of Bible preservation to believe in Bible preservation at all. And that's what we need to understand about the King James Only movement. That they will say that those who do not accept their reasoning do not believe in biblical preservation. And the point is that we don't believe in their version of biblical preservation. God has preserved his word, but he didn't do it in a 17th century Anglican translation, or in what they call the received text, whichever version that is, whether that's one of the five versions of Erasmus or Stephanus, or whether it's Beza, or whichever of the versions you want to use. We don't believe that God's work of preservation, in essence, took place in the 16th century. That is the difference between us. And so it is untrue to say that I do not believe in biblical preservation. It is untrue to say that the book is an attack on the King James Version. The book specifically says the opposite, that we are not attacking the King James Version of the Bible. We're attacking King James Onlyism. And here we have the absolute vindication of exactly what I said at the beginning of the book, and that is that King James Only advocates think in a circle. They reason in a circle, and they redefine words to fit into their argumentation. So, when you attack their position, which is not a historical position, this position's only been around for literally in the decades, when you attack their position, they say, oh, you're attacking the King James Version of the Bible. No, we treat the King James Version of the Bible the same way the King James translators would have. It is they who've come up with this strange idea of investing into the words of the King James Version of the Bible some authority that its translators never believed that it had. So the book's not an attack on the King James Version of the Bible. It's not an attack on the received text, unless you define speaking the truth about the quote-unquote received text, the TR, as an attack. And that, of course, is exactly what they are doing. So the very first question demonstrates that entire sections of my book, The King James Only Controversy, have been completely misunderstood by the individuals on the program. And notice, Dr. Waite does not provide much of a response to the question. Here's what he says.
That's correct.
That's it. That's all he said. You're correct. Well, you couldn't exactly expect a whole lot of interaction between the two. They're not going to disagree with one another on an issue like this. Well, let's continue on with some of the statements that were made.
Does that sound somewhat contradictory? I mean, he does speak about 2 Timothy 3:16, all scripture is given by inspiration and is profitable and so on and so forth. And yet, in effect, seems that Mr. White is saying that if just about anyone comes out with a Bible translation, it's okay.
Well, of course, such is not the case whatsoever. I have criticized many translations. When people ask me about translations, I'll be happy to criticize, especially the European translations, liberal translations, and things like that. It seems that because I defended the foundation of modern practices of biblical translation, that that means that from these folks' perspective, that making legitimate every possible translation that happens in the modern period. Such is obviously ridiculous. You cannot derive that from a reading of my book in any way, shape, or form. That simply isn't true, and yet Dr. Waite responds,
that's true. He certainly has his blessings upon all the different versions, most of them, of course, even the ones by the National Council of Churches, like the Revised Standard and New Revised Standard and so on. He seems to have no distinction, no discrimination between the ones and among the different versions, and yet he doesn't tell which one he really prefers. He sort of hints that he prefers the New American Standard, New King James, New International, and I guess he's even apologetic. He says, well, if you want to use the King James, nothing wrong with you, but don't just use that only. I guess that's his main thing, isn't it?
Well, I have a suggestion for Dr. Waite. When someone calls you up and says, let's do a radio program on James White's book, my suggestion is this. Don't rely on something that you might have read on a surface level about 4 years ago. Because I can tell you, I don't remember as much about all the minutiae in regards to various translations and textual issues today as I did when I was writing that particular book. And it's sadly obvious in light of what Dr. Waite has said so far, that he's going on old memories and they're not very accurate memories. I have often jokingly talked about the Revised Standard Perversion. There are many translations in the RSV that I reject, that I in fact use as examples of liberalism in translation and the way in which that can be snuck in and things like that. So, quite honestly, Dr. Waite doesn't know what he's talking about at this point, and there really wasn't any reason for this. Dr. Waite could have contacted me. He could have asked me. He certainly knows my email address is, because he has all those unanswered emails that I've sent to him inviting him to discuss these issues. But again, if you're going to go on a national radio program and make these statements, you might want to know what you're talking about. Unfortunately, Dr. Waite hasn't done that in this particular situation. My blessing is not on all modern translations in any way, shape, or form. But we continue.
Yes, in fact, I've read his comments on Psalm 12. It seems to me very strongly to teach preservation, verses 6 and 7. But White and company argue that the promise pertains to all the translations and versions combined. So, allegedly, the Bible never promises that there will be one preserved version, but that all the versions taken together give us the preserved Word of God. So that would seem to me, if the Joe down the street wants to make a version, then that is also included in Psalm 12, 6, and 7. Doesn't that seem contradictory?
It is difficult for me to understand exactly what Dr. Spargimino is referring to here. I wrote a fairly lengthy discussion of Psalm 12 in response to Dr. Holland and pointed out that the King James does not even provide the literal rendering of the passage, and that the King James only interpretation of the passage is having reference to some methodology of biblical preservation in a 17th century Anglican translation has absolutely positively no basis whatsoever in the text itself. But to then go from there and say that somehow I was suggesting that the promise of preservation, which refers to God's keeping His Word, not in any particular translation, but keeping it from being manhandled and changed by men and doctrines inserted and taken out and so on and so forth, how that is even slightly relevant to what I said about Psalm 12, I honestly cannot even begin to understand. I do not know what he's referring to. It makes no sense, and certainly there's no application in what I have said about Psalm 12 to the assertion that I'm saying that any old translation is just fine. This is simply a complete misrepresentation of my position. Now, I mentioned earlier on that the debate that took place between myself and Dr. Waite on KIXL Radio in Austin, Texas, is found on our website. Actually, it's on straightgate.com, but we have links to it from our website. And I would encourage the listener to listen to that debate for yourself, because in this next segment, Dr. Waite makes reference to that debate, and it's interesting how he describes me, especially if you've listened to the debate itself. Listen to this.
I debated him for 2 hours one time on an evening meeting, about 10, 15 years ago. I don't remember exactly when it was. In fact, I've got the tapes here. I listened to it just to hear myself, see what we talked about. 1994, it's only 6 years ago. And I found that he was very like an amoeba. He was an amoebic in that he would shift and move. You could not pin him down.
Yeah, that's me, all right. Amoebic. I haven't been called amoebic in a long time. Nor have I ever had anyone tell me that my problem was that you couldn't pin me down. Most of the time, people are complaining that I'm too dogmatic. Not that you can't pin me down. Again, I would simply invite the listener to go listen to the debate. If you can't access it through the internet, then get the tapes from us. And I think it's pretty clear who didn't want to be pinned down and who couldn't actually provide a defense of their position. I think that came out very clearly in the debate itself. Now, Dr. Waite made another reference to our debate as well. Here's what he said.
When I was debating with him, he, for instance, takes a verse and says, now this shouldn't be there, and so on, and yet he claims to use the New King James, which he claims that he uses and likes it, and the New King James and the majority text that he likes has that particular reading, but Tex Receptus has it also, but his Westcott and Hort doesn't have it, and so it's hard to pin him down just where he's coming from.
Well, Dr. Waite, it wouldn't be hard to pin me down on where I'm coming from if you'd read my book and if you'd listen to what we said on the radio program. It's really hard to respond to this kind of assertion, especially recognizing, again, this is being put out on a national radio program. This is being put out for public consumption. I do not use the majority text. I do not use the TR. Therefore, the New King James Version, people ask me all the time, what do you think about the New King James Version of the Bible? It is an excellent translation of an inferior text. Excellent translation of an inferior text. And I think what Dr. Waite's referring to is if you go back and listen to the debate, I raised a number of passages like Luke 2:22 or the passage in Revelation where Beza made a conjectural emendation or in Timothy where you have readings that are found in the King James Version of the Bible and in various editions of the Textus Receptus that have either no or almost no Greek manuscript support whatsoever. That in essence, Christians had read these texts in one certain way for over 1,000 years, or as many as 1,400 or 1,500 years, never any other way, and yet there was this change in the compilation of the TR, and now the King James reflects this change. And I had asked him, why should we accept an emendation that is made by someone such as Theodore Beza? Why should we go with a reading that's in the TR that is not known in the Greek manuscript evidence at all? And he had no response. Listen to the debate yourself. That doesn't mean it's difficult to nail down where I'm coming from. It means it's difficult for him to understand and respond to the documentation of the errors of his position. But that doesn't make me amoeba-like. It makes his position incomprehensible. And for me to point out the incomprehensibility and indefensibility of his position doesn't mean that I'm the one shifting ground in any way, shape, or form. Then Dr. Waite makes this very interesting statement.
He claims his father was a Baptist, GARB, General Association of Regular Baptist Churches. He's a Baptist minister himself. And by the way, as you mentioned, this book was used in different places. Did you realize it's also recommended not only from the new evangelicals or the liberals, but also the fundamentalists?
Well, that's interesting. I don't know of any liberals who recommend it in the sense that I believe in inerrancy and I promote the inspiration of Scripture. It's a very conservative book, but maybe they recommend it only as an antidote to King James onlyism. I don't know. But be that as it may, listen to this next statement by Dr. Spargimino. It illustrates yet again the seeming either inability or unwillingness of King James only advocates to break out of the narrow spectrum of their thinking and to hear what the opposition is saying. Listen to the not only the misrepresentation of my position, but the foundation that is provided by Dr. Spargimino for his assertions.
But it seems that when we take the position that Mr. White and a whole bunch of evangelicals have taken, that rather than having confidence in the promise of the Lord Jesus Christ, they now have confidence in some super group of elitist scholars who are somehow able to restore the text rather than believing in the preserved text. So that shifts the whole focus from the promise of God to the wisdom of men. And that makes me a little bit uncomfortable.
As well, it should make you a little bit uncomfortable. Of course, that's not my position, not the position of anyone that I know of or would agree with, but it is instead a straw man. First of all, no one is rejecting Jesus' promise. Jesus never talked about the King James Version of the Bible, and it is the absolute height of eisegesis to think that anything Jesus said points us to a 17th century Anglican translation of the Bible that no one uses anymore. The Bible that Dr. Spargimino or Dr. Waite uses is not the 1611 King James Version. It's the 1769 Blaney Revision. And even then, does he use the Oxford or the Cambridge? Is it a Thomas Nelson? Is it published by someone else? There are differences between them. You see, when you start using this kind of rhetoric, and it is, it's just rhetoric, to say all these people don't believe the promise of Jesus, that is simply untrue. It's unworthy of a Christian scholar to make that kind of a statement, because it's untrue. And if he's read my book, he knows that not only do I believe Jesus, but I believe in every promise that he gave. And so to associate the promise of Jesus with his particular theory regarding biblical preservation is, again, a wonderful example of the circularity of King James only reasoning. Not only that, but it's a tremendous example of the error of the King James only position in ignoring its own history. The King James is the result of the textual decisions of a group of scholars. There were scholars in England, it's the result of the textual decisions of the Roman Catholic priest Desiderius Erasmus, and it's going to be fascinating when we get to their desperate attempts to get around the fact that Erasmus was a Roman Catholic priest. But the textual decisions of Erasmus, Stephanus, Beza, and the King James translators. There is their quote-unquote group of scholars. And in reality, this criticism is valid against them, not against us. When I read my text, I have the textual variants at the bottom of the page. Dr. Waite, in his book, attacks the New King James Version of the Bible for even listing variant readings in the margin. And I just note in passing that the King James Version was originally published, had all sorts of such notes, but be that as it may, I have those textual variations. I can look at them. I don't have to depend upon a group of super scholars, but they do. They have to depend upon the assertions and the decisions of Erasmus, Stephanus, Beza, and the King James translators, who are long gone. And the King James translators themselves, in their foreword, laid out the principles of textual criticism that they used, and guess what? The King James translators would never have agreed with what the King James only advocates say in regards to their theory of preservation. And folks, this is why they will not engage in debate. This is why they're so hesitant to allow both sides to be heard. And that is why the King James Only Controversy book has had the impact that it has. Because the simple fact of the matter is, folks, when you allow both sides to get together, I can point out where every single argument the King James Only side uses can be turned around and applied to their own position. Right now they say, you're depending upon scholars. You've got these super scholars that recreate the text. And I can just simply turn around and say, well, if you have a problem with using textual critical principles and having groups of scholars working on it, then you have the exact same problem. Because you had Erasmus, and he talks about the methodology that he utilized, and you've got Stephanus, and you've got Beza, and you've got the King James translators, and they use the exact same kind of reasoning. We simply today can examine the decisions that are made by those that we allegedly are quote-unquote following, and we don't have to follow them. If I read something in the text of my Nestle Aland 27th edition and I disagree with the committee's decision, hey, I've got the information right there. I can check it out. They can't. They can't go back and look at what information the King James translators had, and that causes the problem. Folks, we'd like to hear from you. 602-274-1360. We will be taking calls. 602-274-1360. 1-888-550-1360 are the phone numbers for you to call and get involved. We're going to have another segment after the break where we continue doing interaction, and then we'll take a few phone calls at the end of the hour. We'll be doing the same thing next week. So get on the phone line now if you want to have an opportunity of talking about the King James only controversy. We'll be right back. To make these claims, when you don't have to defend these claims, when you know the person interviewing you is never going to challenge you. But that's why I challenge Dr. Waite to come on this program and tell us where these councils met. Who made these decisions, Dr. Waite? The simple historical fact is, what you're saying is untrue. So why say it? Because it substantiates the King James only position. And then he goes on to be specific and say that, I love the Westcott and Hort text. And in fact, in the next section we're going to hear, he says that that I have said, and I do say in my book, that the modern text, the United Bible Society's 4th edition, the Nestle Aulin 27th edition, is not the Westcott and Hort text. That is a simple fact. Anyone who has studied these issues knows that the UBS 4th and the Nestle Aulin 27th reject many of the Westcott-Hort readings. They take into consideration more information. In fact, I said in my book, the Westcott and Hort were overly enamored with Vaticanus Sinaiticus, or as he calls it, Aleph and B. And so you will find many readings in the modern texts that differ from the Westcott and Hort text. But Dr. Waite, for some reason, doesn't want people to realize that because he vilifies Westcott and Hort so much. And so listen to what he has to say here.
B and Aleph, the Vatican and Sinai, the Westcott and Hort type of manuscripts that Mr. White claims to love, although he claims that the Westcott and Hort text is no longer now acceptable, which is wrong. It is certainly almost identical with the United Bible Society's text or the Nestle Aulin text. But he says the churches had an idea as to what was truth, and because they rejected the B and Aleph type of manuscripts, B and Aleph and about 43 others are the only ones that have survived through the years, whereas that's less than 1% of what's survived. And yet the text of Receptus type of manuscripts, over 5,210, over 99% have survived. The churches knew what was right and what was wrong.
Again, this is simply wishful thinking. Dr. Waite cannot point to any time where the quote-unquote church sat down with knowledge of the differences in manuscripts, the manuscript text types. There was never a period of time when the churches ever had as much information as we have today about the various types of manuscripts and their readings, and has made such a decision. This simply isn't true. And if we could challenge Dr. Waite, okay, there is your assertion. Now, prove it. Document it. Tell us when this happened. Give us some information. Then we'd be able to see that this position is merely assertion and not fact. And that is, again, why we'd like to have a two-way conversation, not just this one way. By the way, folks, we will take calls today. We will take calls in the last quarter hour of the program. First come, first served, on this subject only, please. 602-274-1360 locally, 1-888-550-1360. Now's your opportunity to get online. And we will take your calls, your questions on this subject of the King James only controversy, the last quarter hour of the program, so get online now. Now, in the few minutes we have before we go to phone callers, let me touch on one really important area. The next area that Dr. Spargimino went into was the issue is doctrine affected by textual variation? And I made the assertion in the King James only controversy that if you apply the same standards of exegesis and hermeneutics to the Westcott and Hort text on one extreme, and to the Textus Receptus on the other extreme, that you will not come up with a different doctrine. I cannot get King James only individuals to deal with my actual assertion. Instead, what they'll always do is they'll say, oh, well, look at this, look at a variation over here in 1 Timothy 3, or look at this one over. I'm well aware, since the book discusses these things, well aware of the fact that there are textual variations that have doctrinal relevance. But no doctrine depends on a textual variation. And since we can determine, if we don't just simply start with our conclusion and reason in a circle, we can determine the original readings. And so the issue is the modern texts do not present some different doctrinal position than does the Textus Receptus. That has been my assertion. But notice, even though Dr. Waite allegedly has read my book, notice how he will respond to the following question from Dr. Spargimino.
The standard line is that it really does not affect a single doctrine. No single Bible doctrine is affected by a different text. Now, Mr. White makes that claim. Christianity Today makes that claim. And many evangelicals make that claim. Dr. Waite, what is your response that no doctrine is affected?
Now notice, at least Dr. Spargimino asked the right question, that no doctrine is affected. Not that there are no doctrinally relevant variations, but that no doctrine is affected. But listen to Waite's response.
Well, my response is they should look at the research done by Dr. Jack Mormon. He has taken the pains to go through the entire Greek New Testament And he's come up with 356 doctrinal passages where the NIV and other modern Bible versions have erred from the Textus Receptus that involve doctrine. Now, to say that no doctrine is involved when 356 doctrinal passages, now these are passages, some of the passages which are lengthy, that includes Mark 16, 9 to 20, many of the...
Well, these passages involve doctrines, but does any doctrine of the faith depend upon Mark 16, 9 through 20? What doctrine is that? Snake handling? Again, what is found in the King James only controversy is being ignored. And if Dr. Waite would come on the program, if Dr. Spargimino would come on the program, if they would debate this out before the people of God, then we could ask the question in cross-examination. Dr. Waite, show us a passage in Scripture that is found in the Textus Receptus, but not in the modern text, that is the basis of an entire doctrine. What doctrine is it? Show us the text and give us the opportunity of demonstrating that the reading in the Nessiolon 27th edition is fully in harmony with Christian truth. Because this, folks, I point out in the book, becomes very dangerous because it ends up being Jack Mormon or D.A. Waite determining what theology is and then determining the reading of text, of the text of Scripture, on the basis of their understanding of theology. For example, they love to go after John chapter 1, verse 18, and saying, well, if you take the modern text, that means God has a beginning because it means only begotten God. And they dismiss any possibility that the term monogenes that is used there can mean unique or one of a kind. Now, here's the important part. Therefore, their interpretation of the passage becomes the determining factor as to what the passage must say. Since they do not interpret monogenes theos as meaning unique God, the one who uniquely reveals the Father, therefore the text can't say that. And even though the two earliest manuscripts, papyri manuscripts of the Gospel of John, say that, they have to be rejected on what basis? Is it a basis of examining the text, of being fair with the manuscripts? No. The basis is that the 17th century Anglican translation called the King James Version says differently, and since that is our final authority, then everything else must be corrected in light of that. And this, we'll get to this later on because we're running out of time, but one of the charges made against me in the second program is that I'm dishonest in throwing D.A. Waite and Peter Ruckman into the same group. And yet, here's an example of where I'm not dishonest in doing that. Because I do not believe that D.A. Waite would ever say that any reading of the King James Version of the Bible is an error. And that fundamentally makes the King James Version inspired and inerrant. Now, if Dr. Waite will say, well, okay, I'll agree with Dean Burgon, for example, that the comma Johannium should not be in the King James Version of the Bible, then I'll withdraw that and say, hey, and even though I did differentiate between them, I'll say, hey, this is not a King James-only person in the way that Peter Ruckman is. But until Dr. D.A. Waite has the willingness to come out and say that there are passages in the King James Version that could be translated better, then in reality, what is the functional difference between his view and Peter Ruckman's view that the King James Version is new revelation? It was inspired between 1604 and 1611, or maybe, as he put it in some of his writings, there was a purification process resulting in the old Scofield edition. Whatever you take. If Dr. Waite will not admit that there is any reading in the King James Version of the Bible that could possibly be better, even though the King James translators certainly would admit that, then what is the functional difference between his position and Peter Ruckman's? I don't see it. I don't see it at all. Well, this is just the beginning of our response. We're going to continue with playing these sections, providing a response, inviting Dr. Waite, stand up, defend what you've said. Dr. Spargimino, defend your assertions. Let's let the people of God hear the facts. Because when the facts are brought forward, the truth is easily seen. 602-274-1360, 1-888-550-1360. What do you think? Get online now. We only have a few minutes. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Dividing Line. My name is James White. We have a full board of calls, and we want to get them all in before the end of the hour. So please be succinct and clear. In fact, speak quickly, because we only have about 12 minutes. So we start with Jennifer. Jennifer, your question.
Hi. When Christ was on earth, he didn't speak English.
That's correct. The English language didn't exist till
about 1100 AD. How do we know that the translations are authentic, since the original text is in Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek? And yes, I do believe that the Bible is the inspired word of God.
Okay, thank you very much, Jennifer. Well, we know that simply for the reason that we are able to translate these languages. We are able to compare them with all sorts of other material that was available at the time. These are languages that we can translate into the English language accurately. I'm not sure if the question has to do with the issue of the manuscripts that we have or just simply with the issue of translation, but the English language is not as expressive as, for example, Greek or Greek is. And so that's one of the reasons that in my book, The King James Only Controversy, I recommend very highly that you compare one translation with another so that you can get a fuller spectrum of the meaning that is available to us. You can see how alternate translations can better convey the meaning of the original. But there really isn't any issue, I believe, in regards to translating from one language to another. There's all sorts of philosophical discussions that go on that become far more obtuse than most people can follow. But just as a person today can speak Spanish and English and can translate between the two, and sometimes has to translate more than once to get the idea across, in the same way, we are able to accurately translate from one language to another. Let's talk with Rusty in Phoenix. Hi, Rusty.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good.
Hey, Dr. White, are you the one... I listened to that program, by the way, on Southwest Radio Church that day.
Yes, uh-huh.
And are you the one that wrote Daring to Draw Near?
No.
Okay, well, I wasn't sure if it was you or not, but I was disappointed in hearing that that program. And now today, just by chance, I caught yours driving around town. And my concern and my question was, if biblical translation is so difficult to figure out which one, or even certain passages, are the correct passages, then what do I need to do as a Christian to handle accurately the word of truth, which it says in 2 Timothy 2:15, to give an account for the hope that is in me for certain scriptures, because I am stuck on a certain passage in 1 John 3 that says, no one who is born of God practices sin, but the word practice doesn't show up in the NIV. I've referred to the Dallas Theological Seminary information on that, and there's such a controversy on certain passages that what do I need to do as a common Christian and believer to be able to handle the word without taking classes and going to Bible college?
Well, first of all, there isn't nearly as much controversy as the Southwest Radio Church would like you to believe. The King James Only movement represents a very small number of people, and the fact that they will generally not engage in any type of meaningful defense of their position.
Yeah,
in fact,
I was hearing you saying.
Well, yeah. In fact, here on KPXQ, I've been on Marty Minto's program a number of times. They've had a King James Only advocate on, and I don't think I'm in any way, shape, or form misstating the case to say that those who listened all said, my goodness, the man couldn't answer any question you asked of him. And yeah. Next Saturday on the program, I'm going to play 12 minutes of the debate that D.A. Waite and I did do on the radio. And I just invite you to, you know, put an alarm on your watch or your Palm Pilot or whatever to listen in so you can see exactly what takes place. But in regards to, for example, a passage in 1 John where you're going, well, look, this phrase practices,
right.
Where does that come from? Well, there are a number of the first and foremost place from the New Testament's perspective you go to is you go to your elders and those who have been entrusted in teaching and preaching the Word of God, and you ask them. And I believe that elders, if they fulfill the command of 1 Timothy and Titus,
right.
should be able to explain to you that the reason that the word continue is found in some translation is because of the tense of the Greek verb.
Right.
That is, that it refers to an ongoing action. Now, if you've talked with Dan Wallace at Dallas Seminary, which may be the person who ended up responding to your question, I don't know. He has a discussion of what he understands the present tense there to be indicating and so on and so forth. But that's the primary reason that some translations have that word to try to communicate something that in English, when we say sins, if someone sins, we are not necessarily communicating with the precise nature that the original Greek did. So we have to ask in English, well, do you mean is continuing to sin, or sins once in a while, or sins as a pattern of life,
exactly,
or, you know, so on and so forth. And really, that's that. A lot of that is due to the English language, not to what's in the original. Now, this is going to sound very strange to you, because we live in a day where someone in our chat room refers to evangelicalism and evangelicals as evangelifish, because there's this goofiness about evangelicals. But it was not long ago that a person would not go into the ministry without learning those languages. And there was not long ago that most denominations would not allow a person so to do. In fact, if you went out to Arizona State University and you tried to study, for example, get a master's degree in the German author Goethe, there's one thing I can guarantee you will be required of you before you would ever get that degree. What would it be? Learning German.
Right.
You got it. And so we are English speakers. We speak in language that was written, that did not even exist until 1,100 years after the New Testament was written.
Well, I'm going to get your book, but the question I have is, do you recommend getting an interlinear? I have like six or seven versions, and I refer to them all.
No, I would not suggest interlinear. An interlinear will do you no good at all. I know that the people going, oh, no, I just invested $30.
Yeah.
Do you have a computer?
No.
Well, that would probably be a far better investment for you than anything else, because there are programs today that, short of learning the language, give you more information than any printed format could ever do. I mean, you can buy a single program today that will give you a library of 300 books all on one screen at one time.
Right.
And so if you're looking that direction, I think most people probably are, contact us and I'll tell you what programs are the best. Well, I'll tell you right now, free advertisement, Hermeneutica Software's BibleWorks 4.0 is the best Bible program out there. It gives you pretty much everything you could possibly need. But that information is available to you. And my hope would be that you would have a church home and elders you could go to that could give you some guidance in that area.
Well, actually, I did. I went to the elder, one of the main teacher of our fellowship, and I asked, and he holds to the NIV interpretation of that, which says, does not continue to practice sin, which doesn't exist without the existence of other Greek words, which I've understood from the Dallas Theological thing I read.
Well, I'm not sure what Dallas Theological thing you're referring to.
Specifically, it was the verse, I think it's chapter 3:9, you know, no one who is born of God sins. He does not practice sin.
Right.
He cannot sin because he is born of God. And I'm trying to put that together with Romans 4, 5, 6, and 7, and 8 with understanding my position, you know. But the hard thing I'm having is these different translations are using different words, and I don't know which is the right word,
right,
which totally sheds a different light on the meaning.
Well, I think
practices, how do I get to the bottom line of what the real meaning is?
Right. Well, practices is a perfectly viable rendering of the text. Let me mention that to you just right off the bat.
Uh-huh.
Both the New American Standard, the NIV, both have that. And so there is reason in the form of the Greek words themselves for that word to be there. You have commentaries that would probably explain some of this, but that's really where I believe an elder can provide you with some of that information and at least give you the right direction, or maybe contact someone else who could. But that's where you start. And I just commend you for doing the work. Most people just throw up their hands and say, well, I obviously can't do this. No,
well, that's
you
kind
can.
Of where I'm frustrated with even with God, is thinking, well, what do I have to do? Become a seminary student to be able to rightly divide the word?
No, I don't think that that's the case at all. I think that you do, however, have to be a student of the word, and it's not something that ends at any particular point in time. It's a lifelong thing. And let me tell you something from my perspective. I've done this type of work for many, many years. The reward is worth the effort. Believe me, it is.
I agree.
Okay, Rusty?
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling.
Thank
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Sid, Dennis, we're going to be taking calls in the last section next week. Please call back again next week, and we will give you priority. We'll remember your name. We'll give you priority and get you on first because we're out of time. Thanks for listening. We're going to continue the response to the Southwest Radio programs next week here on The Dividing Line. I don't know how long it's going to last, but we're going to keep doing it, giving an answer. Thanks for being with us today on The Dividing Line. God bless. See you next week.
The Dividing Line has been brought to you by Alpha and Omega Ministries. If you'd like to contact us, call us at 602-973-0318 or write us at P.O. Box 37106, Phoenix, Arizona 85069. You can also find us on the World Wide Web at aomin.org. That's aomin.org, where you'll find a complete listing of James White's books, tapes, debates, and tracts. Join us again next Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. for The Dividing Line.